Welcome, welcome, everybody, to Coming Hot in the Box, Roller Derby Podcast. Did you know that? Oh my god, it's me, it's Carnage, and...
Slice? I'm pretty sure you said pot in there. I think you said pot podcast.
That fits for Slay and I.
Pot podcast. It's not a pot podcast.
Well, I mean, it could be. I could talk about pot for a long time. Great. I enjoy the wacky tobacco.
I thought we were going down the pottery road.
Oh! No. Yes, not pot, as in pottery.
¿Por qué no los dos?
Yeah, ¿por qué no los dos? Both. Yes.
I enjoy the pot while potting.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so zen. What a nice zen, afternoon activity, man. Mm. I picture me in a rage room.
Yeah. Right,
throwing the pottery.
So you guys are based in Connecticut, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So has it been legalized there yet?
Ooh, jelly. Ah,
that's why you're able to finally talk about it.
Yes.
Carnage can.
Yes. Yes, I don't work for the government. I work for a small family-owned business, and I'm very open about my marijuana usage. Because the thing is, I don't drink really. I'll have maybe like a handful of drinks a year. I'm not a drinker, so my way to relax is with some weed.
Yeah.
Florida's still a little back ass words, so you know.
I have a lot of feelings on Florida, but we won't get into
that. Oh, so do we. We have a lot of feelings about being here as well.
Yep.
It's all good.
Yes,
I actually grew up in Connecticut until I was 14. I lived in Bridgeport.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, in the hood.
Bridgeport, the armpit of Connecticut.
Oh, in there.
Oh, very in there.
Yep. I graduated from eighth grade, and then that's when I moved to Florida.
Nice.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's sunnier.
I'll say I was definitely ahead of everybody else in school. I'm here like, and I was like, that's right, Connecticut was number one in education when I was in middle school, so that makes sense. But whatever, you know, the experiences I had out here were, you know, what made me who I am, and the experiences I had in Connecticut as well. So I mean, I'm grateful for the journey.
My mother-in-law lives in Melbourne, so I was actually out there a couple weeks ago, last month. And it's the first time I'd been down in probably 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all set.
Yep, you're good for
next week.
Well, you know, people, if you want to come to Orlando, you're more than welcome.
Thank you. I will. Like, I actually have friends in Kissimmee.
Yes.
And, they work at Universal, so I've been able to, like, snake my way in. And
girl, I got annual passes. Yeah. Let me know.
A lot of us
in Orlando Roller Derby, we're all like what we call dual citizens, and we have annual passes for Disney and Universal. So if you ever come down and you want to have a day with derby people at the park, we can arrange that.
I want to go to Disney so bad.
Be still life.
Nice, you gotta do it. Self-care. You gotta go.
Oh, and we know people who work at Universal.
I was in Florida like the week before Carnage was, but I went to Discovery Cove.
Where's that?
Ah, okay, yeah, with the dolphins.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I got to swim with the dolphins.
That's cool. Yeah. Can't beat that.
That was fun. That was nice.
Mm-hmm. And then we have like really nice springs out here.
I was
manatees, gators, and otters.
Yeah,
I saw some manatees one year when I went out. It was nice.
Oh, they're so beautiful.
Yeah, like now you have peoples.
Manatees?
Well, that's
one of our home teams. Our home teams are the manatees, the hellcats, and the snowbirds.
are the snowbirds older? Are they your older?
No, they're the snowbird bombers. I'm just here like, whatever. I'm in the bombers, so I'm just like, all right, cool. But I used to be a manatee, so, nice. You know, switch teams and all that. Gotta love it.
Didn't pirates used to think that manatees were mermaids?
Oh, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That seems right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's more inappropriateness down that hole, but we won't go there.
No, I'm good.
That's a different type of podcast.
Not this one.
Yeah, not this one. So,
or the Derby After Dark.
New segment, Derby After Dark. We'll just do interviews during after parties.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
The array of people you would get. I love Dark Zelda. It's my favorite.
Well, you know what's... We have our very first bout on Saturday.
We're Sunday.
So
our first bout is Sunday.
We had ours this past Saturday.
So today we have on two special guests to round out. Well, no, not even round out. To add to our mental health and roller derby toolbox kit. So today we are talking with Pachi and Wensley. So, Pachi, tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what got you into this?
Absolutely. I'm not great at talking about myself, but I'm going to practice. So, I have been playing roller derby for 7, going on 8 years now, I think, on and off, with Miami Roller Derby and now with Swan City. So, obviously, Miami Roller Derby is in Miami. But Swan City is actually in Lakeland, Florida. So I recently moved kind of to Central Florida. What got me into it? Man, I'm going to give the most corny answer ever. I watched Whip It, you know? So I actually watched Whip It when I was really, really young. And I mean, just like the cast of that is 10-10, super hot. Like, so seeing some really hot, badass women on skates, I was like, I want to be a really hot, badass woman on skates. But I was living in North Carolina at the time, and there wasn't a derby team close enough to me to be able to start. And this was like in my early 20s. So when I finally got back to Miami, I was sorting my life out. And I was like, man, I got to get back to like that roller derby thing. And fast forward like 5 years later, because you know how it's always touch and go. Like I reached out and I was like, I'll go to a fresh meet. Just kidding. I panicked. So I eventually finally got to go out, and it's been such an amazing sport. I have really enjoyed like meeting people in it and socializing through it. I spread the word of derby anywhere and everywhere that I go. I always say, like, if you put me on a recruitment team, like, you don't even have to, because I'm going to talk about it anyways. I love the sport. I'm injured right now. Actually, unfortunately, I decided to dislocate my knee a week before our season opener. Again, the second time. Not playing derby at any capacity even. So I have soft tissue issue where my ligaments are a little too stretchy. So if I'm not careful or wearing a brace, my patellas like to, you know, slip. So even now being injured, I want to support, I want a ref, I want an NSO. Like I'm all about supporting the word of derby. So that's my spiel.
Yeah. Thank you. Wensley, you are a returning guest on our podcast. So welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
So why don't you remind folks out there who you play for, how you got into it?
Oh, man. Okay. So I got into roller derby because I needed an outlet, because I'm in a pretty intense field, and my partner was kind of tired of me being grumpy all the time. So he's like, hey, why don't you try this roller derby thing? And I'm like, whatever. And then he took me to a game and I thought it was cool. And then, you know, he took me to the roller rink and I was like, uh-oh, I know what you're trying to do. And then next thing you know, I'm at fresh meet in fall of 2019, right before everything shut down. So I got to do my fresh meet, graduate fresh meet, and then we're starting to do contact. And then bam, COVID came and hit and shut everything down. So I did trail skating and park skating for those 2 years. And then I moved to Orlando. And now I'm with Orlando Roller Derby. I started with them. So technically, I'm in my 3rd year in roller derby, if I don't count the 2 years that nothing was happening. And it was the great skate shortage of 2020.
Well, there was no shortage of skates. Moxie was selling so many skates at that time.
Well, there was a shortage of skates because I tried to get skates and I couldn't find any. And because mm-hmm. I had started.
Yeah, and then because of COVID, they had to shut down the factories. Yeah. Like, they had to cut down in personnel in factories. So it was so many things
I actually just came across a post about Moonlight Roller. I'd wanted those green ones that you ended up getting, Slay. And I was like, bro, there's like none. They're out of stock.
They're gone.
Like, yeah, I remember being so sad.
I got purple ones. I got the Amethyst.
I got the Emerald Cities because I love green.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, they're super nice. But yeah, so then I've been with Orlando since early 2022, like February 2022. I joined them and I've been with them ever since. I'm on their B team now. And I'm also now in the B team of Magic City with Murda, MRDA. So, you know, nice. I'm in two different places, which I'm insane for doing that, but whatever.
You know. How many days do you have practice?
Thankfully, Magic City only has like four practices a month. Essentially, they have two Sundays and two Wednesdays that we do, so that's not too bad, which is why I'm able to be here today. And then Orlando, we have league practices on Sundays and Thursdays, and then Monday we have travel practice. So I'm, you know, at most doing four practices a week, and, you know, if it's a week that, you know, all of them coincide, but the least I'm doing is two.
Better than I thought. I was worried you were doing it four nights a week every week, and I was like, bro, my knees could never.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, right? Right?
Yeah, you know me, I'm crazy. I think if it weren't for the gas expenses, I probably would do all that. But then, no, I gotta actually be home sometimes.
Yeah. So we had such a great conversation with Wensley during our Knights of the Roundtable, our podcast episode that we aired just a couple weeks ago. And we wanted to talk with Wensley more about neurodivergency in roller derby. And she said, you gotta have my pal Patchy on too. So that's why we're all here today, so that we can talk about neurodivergency in roller derby. And I have to say, this is a very, first of all, I think it's neurodivergence week, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. It is.
Yeah, which is awesome. Yeah. But I feel like as a coach, I've been dealing with a lot more neurodivergent people, especially as our season ramps up. And it's been a learning curve on some counts, too, which has been beneficial, but also, you know, challenging. So, yeah, so I'm excited to talk about this topic.
Absolutely.
Today.
It's interesting that you're mentioning it from a coach's standpoint, because I can remember so vividly one of my main coaches in Miami, just like watching her face, like go into like this pensive moment where she could tell that, you know, a person with neurodivergence was asking questions and just really not comprehending a skill. And I could see her, like that coaching brain, really trying to rework how she was going to present this skill, or how, you know, how to just kind of embellish on what was happening to kind of find that the consistency and understanding. So that's great to see it from a coach's standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, cause as a coach, I have to deal with a lot of different personalities, which that in and of itself is challenging, but also when you spice in some neurodivergent, personalities too, you know, it might be that I need to talk a certain way or repeat certain things or show different ways. And I think that's true with all of our trainers, that, you know, certain people are going to learn differently, and then how to communicate with that person. And those people who are not very communicative because of their neurodivergency, how do you get them to be in a sport that is very strong about communication?
Yeah. I recently started coaching Fresh Meat too. And I had that experience where I was like, oh, I need to put my teacher hat on. It's not just like, oh, I'm at derby. Like, this is how I do this skill, or this is how I learn this skill. I was like, yeah, really, I got to do multiple modality. I got to be, you know, visual. I got to be tactile. I had to, you know, go through all of those different avenues to have them kind of understand what I was explaining. So I have two of those under my belt, so that was interesting. So I kind of feel your pain.
Yeah, no, it's been something that I know my league has been trying to combat on many levels. So one of the things that they started doing is they were videoing practices and then posting them onto our Slack. That's how we, you know, communicate. So they post it to Slack and into the Google Drive. So that way people can rewatch it, slow it down, back it up, see what it is that what the skill was, because they try to break it down and make sure they're loud enough for the cameras to hear. So that's one thing that's, you know, appealing for the people who are visual. And also there are many people with different neurodivergence diagnoses that they process slower. It's kind of that you hear it and you're like, huh? And then two seconds later, oh. But when you're on your skates, that's a little harder to really fully process. So, you know, the whole information processing. And then what I started doing, since I'm on B team and I'm B team captain, well, co-captain. So I noticed that, well, I was off skates for a little while, so I had a little notebook and just started writing things down. And then I started doodling the formations of what we're being taught. And then next thing you know, I'm like, hey guys, I feel like I'm useless when I'm off skates. So here's a picture of my doodles of what we learned today. And then I had people approaching me, hey, that really helped me understand this and that. Do you think you could write one for the waterfall, or you could write one for this, or write for this? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So then I asked the coaches, hey, next practice, can we go over this? And then I whipped out my notebook and took off my stinky wrist guard and then drew whatever it was and had the explanation. Had my other captain and coach like look at it. I'm like, okay, is this correct? This is how the sequence is. Okay, cool. And then being able to take a picture and posting it on the Slack and say, okay, for those who are, you know, visually challenged, like not visually challenged, but like are visual learners, take a look. This helped me.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I love that as a learner. Yeah, like that visual would be 10-10 for me.
Absolutely, because I am definitely the type of person who has to, like, I hear it and I'm like, I don't understand. And then I'm like, show me. Okay, show me again.
Yes.
Okay, show me. Keep showing it to me.
Yeah. And then I know some of the league mates I've had that I asked about, you know, what are some of the struggles that you have with your neurodivergence? We had one person who she has ADHD, and she was saying that, you know, there's a small window of listening time for her. And I'm sure you understand this. There's a small time of listening. And if the explanation runs too long, then it becomes Charlie Brown adult. So then it's like, okay, make sure that we're explaining things in a concise manner, you know, short and sweet and to the point. And then if anybody has follow-up questions, like try to pull them to the side or something like that, like, because it could get confusing. And then we end up talking for too long, and then we end up cooling down and we're like, oh, I'm not warm anymore. So, you know, there are benefits to being able to try to just like put things down in a more concise manner. And then doing the examples. It's funny because I feel like we always ask, does anybody need to see a demo? And it's just kind of like, yeah, we always need to see a demo. Like, stop.
Run it again. Oh, one more time, please. Thank you again. Oh, and can you draw it for me? Thanks. Got it. Yeah, I benefit from that immensely. And then kind of piggybacking off of what you're saying, Slay, about like ending up in that conversation about the drill. I love that portion of it. But you're right, not in the middle of practice. Like, I really do. I always want to sit down and kind of like hash out after practice, like, okay, so what were we saying about that? And like, you know, where should the person's body be? And kind of going more in detail. But I think when you're doing skill drills, I think that's the point. You're supposed to be drilling the skills, and they are supposed to be like short, sweet, and concise. Cause if it's too much, mm-hmm. a person has lost it. You're not getting that skill. And then also the visual learners or the kinesthetic ones who need to kind of physically do it are losing all of that. Mm-hmm.
You need to build the muscle memory with the kinesthetic learners. And a lot of people, especially, you know, when we have these sensory sensitivities, like some people are a lot more connected to their bodies. Some people are not so connected to their bodies. So it is, you know, as Carnage says, it's a learning curve because every brain is different. And, you know, just like Bachi was saying about how there's the kinesthetic, there's the visual learners, there's a whole different, like, just like there's many different types of intelligence, there's many different types of learners.
Yeah, right. And I am very much a kinesthetic learner. Like, I need to do the thing. You can talk to me all you want, but I can't, like, it doesn't, like,
yeah,
they don't meet. Like, somewhere in the letters don't meet. And I'm a very tactile person. Like, I, for my job, I am around a lot of different textiles and a lot of tactile things. I will go up to anywhere that I visit and just like,
ooh, me too. Yeah.
I find a texture interesting. I'm like, ooh, mm-hmm. what is that like? Which is terrible when you're like ancient.
Don't touch the pyramids.
But I want to.
Oh God, like us in the caverns, yes, in Cancun, like, for your gosh, we're here like, ah, mm. They're like, no, you can't touch the rocks, yeah. But they're so cool.
But if you tell me not to touch it,
I'm gonna touch it more. Yeah, I mean, more. Speaking of neurospiciness, like my ODD, yeah. my oppositional defiance disorder, kind of, you know, peaks a little bit when they're like, don't, and I'm like, don't, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my OCD reels you in and I'm like, but you know, we can't break the rules. We can't get kicked out. Don't do it. Don't do it. Come this way. Come this way. So, and I'm just here like, touching things with germs and.
And what Slice, I'm sure what Slice can probably attest to is that I am not a good visual teacher. Like, I am better at showing somebody how to do something. And breaking it down, like, I can talk about it while I'm doing it, but I can't talk about it. I have no problem speaking in front of people at all, but, like, my words don't always word
I feel
well.
This. I think that's
Yeah, that's the executive dysfunction. Like, it's that, you know, it starts here, and then instead of going straight here, it's like...
Oh,
it's
doing
yeah.
the Macarena.
Yeah, I feel that so hard.
Like, your thought took the scenic route.
Yeah. Where I'm like, oh, I knew what I was going to say, but it didn't get there. It went over there.
No,
it ran into a box of kittens.
So much, too, when I was coaching the fresh meat, I was like, I know how to do a turnaround stop. I know how to do, like, wait, okay, hold on. And then I had to physically do it to be like, okay, guys, so you're going to stand like this, and then you're going to try to open up your hip. And I found myself using my hands, but also using my body, and then simultaneously, you know, feeling it necessary to use my words. It was really interesting, the feedback that you get, because some people are like, and this is me as a learner too, but they're like, okay, cool, I got to practice it. And other people were like, do that 15 more times so I can do it with you. And I was great. We'll do it 5 more times.
I used to ask people, be like, okay, now tell me which muscles you're engaging.
Yes.
What does it feel like?
Sometimes you gotta break it down.
Oh, I know. Because I'm like, which muscles am I using? Like, how am I shifting my weight? Like, I can't just, like, watch. I need, like, a complete and total breakdown of what exactly is going on.
See, that's a lot of pressure for the teacher. And since I have to do things exactly right, and I feel like I'm always being, like, oh, I'm not doing it right. So then I just stop doing training. I mean, I once in a while, like, I can't train a group. I can't. I just get very critical of myself. And then I'm like, how do I do this? But. I feel like I'm good at one-on-one. Like, when I see someone who's struggling with something, I'm like, hey, can you come over here? Okay, let's try this. That I'm a lot better at. I feel like, you know, I wouldn't be a good coach, maybe a tutor, like a good one-on-one dirty tutor or something.
I love that you mentioned that, Slice, because that's been me in physical therapy. In physical therapy, especially because I really want my knee to repair, I'm like, great, yeah, like, but I can do that motion, you know, more quad dominant or more glute dominant, like, what do you want me to use right now that is going to give me the most healing the quickest way possible? So I totally feel you. I'm like, okay, it's the minor, the medial, like, what are we doing?
But it also makes, like, it has helped me become like a semi teacher, because I'm not on coaching, but like, if somebody asks me how to do a skill, like a freshie, I can be like, these are the muscles that you're using. This is what it's going to feel like, because I went through and I asked all those questions at the beginning when I was trying to learn these skills.
Exactly.
So now I have it like imprinted in my brain of like, in case they learn like I do, I have those answers.
Yeah, I have a mental like stick figure diagram in my head of all the things I know. So like, if I'm like, all right, I'm going to plow stop, I'm imagining my little stick figure like, and then bending and then like doing all the movements and all that. And I don't know how to explain that to a human.
Yes. You're like, your butt, clench your butt.
Like, maybe I could draw all the stick figures and then point arrows at where you tighten. I don't know. But you know that, Yeah, and that speaks to also just the way that everybody's brain structures are so different and that they'll absorb and observe information in so many different ways. And, like, we need to account for that because a lot of people can feel like they're being left behind, or they could even feel like something's wrong with me, I'm stupid, or, oh, it's because of my disability or because of my this. And it's like, nah, dude, you just learn out a different pattern. So we'll figure out that pattern and, you know, go with it, because that's, you know, you as a person and as a skater is more valuable than, oh yeah, you're not worth the trouble of doing something different. And I feel like in the past, perhaps groups or teams have been like, okay, look, if you can't take it this way, then I don't know how you're going to learn it.
Right.
And, you know, I think transitioning to the whole, what kind of learner are you, so that way I can cater it to you, and then sending that stuff out too. We had one skater that she has a PTSD diagnosis. And she said to her coaches, I need specific detailed feedback to know what I'm doing wrong, or it will drive me crazy. So you can't just be like, okay, you're doing well, or hey, you needed to work on this. What do you mean work on it? Like, bend my knees more, do this more, do that more, pick up more speed, like, give me specifics. So then I didn't know that. So then I did her feedback thing. And then the head coach, like, kind of emailed me back and was like, hey, this person needs more feedback and more specific things. Can you try to be more specific so she can, you know, actually improve? And I'm like, sure thing. And then I just went into more detail and no problem, no incident. And she did better and graduated. So, I mean, it's, and, you know, PTSD falls under the neurodiversity umbrella. So, you know, like, it does shift the way that, you know, learning patterns are.
And I think to branch off of what you were saying about teams, I don't know if it's necessarily been like a team mentality, right? Like a specific team. I definitely think it's an individual mentality and maybe a lack of understanding about, I'm going to use the term neurospicy. I hope no one has a problem with that. It makes me laugh so much. And I think it's perfect because, like Carnage was saying, it's like you are who you are and there's a little spice on top, like, which is great. We all love a good flavoring. So I think that I have found that it's more within the individual, maybe like an old school mindset. Maybe the person is more old school and maybe there really is just a lack of knowledge. Sometimes it's willful ignorance. Sometimes it's just they've had no experience with teaching, right? Like conveying information to another person or a wide group of people. Because, I mean, being a teacher, you step foot in a classroom one day, I don't care what classroom it is, and you know that there's just different personalities, different disabilities, different, all the above out there. So it's not like you're going to look at a group of people and say, oh, you're all the same. You're all going to learn this the exact same way. And I try to think about that every time I engage with anybody, but especially any time that I feel like I have to convey information or teach information.
I see what you say with that. And I think it's about trying to lead with empathy and then also having that consideration and not being lazy about it and not being insecure about it. Because I think one of the biggest things is people will dig their heels in when they feel less valuable or insecure about their ability to teach or coach. So then instead of looking inward of how can I do better for this player, sometimes people go, okay, well, this player is impossible or this player is being difficult. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what to do with them. Mm-hmm. And either we internalize and say, I'm terrible at this, or we externalize and say, they're terrible at this. And, you know, that's when we have to come in with empathy and, you know, like Bachi is saying, educating ourselves and others and, you know, learning to advocate for ourselves as well. Like, hey, it's not that I'm difficult. It's that I have my learning style. It is this and this, and I'm trying my best. And then people being able to be receptive to that instead of being like, no, this is, I think a lot of people also like they get very fixated on how they learn things. I was taught this way and it worked for me, so it should work for you. But that's not always the case.
Hashtag school system.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, speaking of that, I actually made a joke with Carnage when I first got on about making accommodations for myself to be able to get on time. And working in the special education, within the field of special education, a big thing, especially because currently I work with that transitional age, so 18 to 22. So we're working on them adulting. I always say I'm working all day, every day on executive function, teaching adults to adult. I try to think of my daily processes as an adult and I'm like, okay, how can this benefit them? How can this help them? But a big part of that is advocating, like just self-advocating and saying, hi, this is my disability. You know, I have a student with TBI, traumatic brain injury. And I'm like, just go into every interaction that you feel like it might be scrutinized and just be forthcoming with that information. Or if you don't necessarily want to be forthcoming with your diagnosis, you can talk about what accommodations you use. So I have another student, an autistic student, who just struggles a lot with math, but he's such a good cashier. So we have a school, we have a school-based enterprise where he's the cashier, but he needs his calculator, which, funny enough, I feel so bad that he feels like it's such a crush. I was like, buddy, like a crutch, because I'm like, buddy, trust me. I like the lie that they told me in elementary school, like you won't always have a calculator in your pocket, is a lie, mm-hmm. because I always mm-hmm. need my calculator in my pocket. So I try to boost him up, and I'm like, instead of telling them, you know, that you have autism or that you're autistic, you know, just say, I need my calculator. Give me a second. I'm going to go pull out my calculator. And like, that's your way of advocating for that accommodation that you would need to accommodate that scenario for you. And I try to give a space, at least I did when I coached those two fresh meets, where I was like, hey, like, does anybody need anything specific? Or if you catch me while I'm teaching and you feel like you just didn't understand something, please stop me. You know, like Slay was saying, you have to be understanding and empathetic. It can't be like, oh, well, you're wasting my coaching time. It's like, okay, this is important, right? You can, what do they call them in seminars where you like put it on the whiteboard, but there's like a term for it, but it's like, basically like you hold off until the end. Like maybe it's something that you can't address in that moment. Maybe it'll take too long, but you put it on a sticky note and you kind of come back to it. So I try to do that mentally when I'm coaching wherever it is.
Yeah, we call it the parking lot. I teach a class and we call it
the parking lot. Oh, we call it that at my job, the parking lot.
We're
gonna park
in the parking lot for now and we'll come back to it.
Yes, that is exactly it. And I think it gives people space to feel comfortable, like they're, you know, not an inconvenience and not putting all that judgment on themselves, where they feel like, oh no, like my neurospiciness is now impacting everyone else's learning. And it's like, no way, dude, maybe other people have that question, but they don't have that self-advocacy that you have. So I think it's important.
Yeah. And then we have that pervasiveness of rejection sensitivity within the neurodiverse population. A lot of people with ADHD have the rejection sensitivity. A lot of people with, well, just a lot of conditions have that. So it's that sense of, I'm going to be a burden, I'm annoying, people are going to reject me, so I'm just going to stay quiet, or I'm just not going to, you know, make myself too, you know, like, I remember always thinking that every question I asked was annoying, and it's just like, no, it's not. If it's a question that you feel like it's important, then ask it. And it's like, oh, okay.
I would definitely say that there was a time when I was in fresh meat. I did fresh meat twice because the first time around I was in and out. I couldn't really complete all of it. And I definitely like, I coped with a lot of self-deprecating humor. So one of the girls that I was coaching in fresh meat has immense self-deprecating humor. And it was really interesting to see it from a coach's perspective versus, you know, me really being able to see myself in her shoes. I was like, oh my God, that was me just talking shit. Like, while the coach was telling me, oh, you're doing that good, you know, just do this. And she was advancing at a fine pace, but at self-deprecating humor, I think that takes you out of the game a little bit too. Cause although there is a physical game, I think we have a mental game too. And yeah. I would keep telling her, I'm like, you know, I would almost, I do planned ignoring. I mentioned it before we jumped on, but I was a registered behavioral therapist for a little while, but planned ignoring is such a useful skill because I'm like, I'm not going to feed into those negative thoughts that I know are just a defense mechanism. Instead, like, I'm going to help you try to rephrase them in a way that shows me what you want to learn or what you need help with. Because the minute I would hear her make a self-deprecating comment, I'm like, aha, okay, so you want help with this. You just don't necessarily know how to advocate for it, and making a joke of it like feels more comfortable because I identify with that 100%. So I was able to kind of like take something that I had done and turn it around as a coach and be like, okay, this is how we're going to help you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Reframing is a really important tool in our toolbox to be able to try to change the perspective of what it is that we're looking at. And I mean, I had one of my teammates that she did the same thing. She was an A and I was like barely scraping into B level. And I remember just being like, I'm always going to be a terrible blocker. I suck as a blocker, da, 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 da. And she's just like, you can block. You just believe that you can't. And I'm looking at her like, like, dang it. Okay, fine. It was like one of those, like, oh, I respect you too much to say anything now. okay. And it really is. Oh, yeah. Words are important.
Words are important.
You know, it's not that I can't do this, yes, as yes. I can't do
you
this
speak
yet.
Speak it into existence. Yeah. Abso-freaking-lutely.
Yeah. Or like the brain training that, you know, instead of saying what you don't want to do, your brain doesn't recognize the negatives. So it'll be like, okay, don't fall. And in your head, you're saying fall. So instead of saying don't fall, we say to ourselves, stay up.
Stay up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because then the brain will hear stay up instead of fall, because when we say don't fall, it doesn't really process the don't or the no or the, you know, the negatives.
For your student who had who is autistic and has to use the calculator, I work with engineers that need calculators on a daily basis.
Bro, they're here.
Everybody needs a calculator.
They're here. Like-
right. So I don't trust my own math. And neither do, like, people building, like, multi-million dollar machinery.
No, no.
So,
Excel, run this for me.
Right. It's okay to have a calculator. But second, I was going to say, I have rephrased how I approach jamming. Is like, because I used to say, I can't do it. Now I say, I don't want to.
Yes! Oh, man, Slice. No jammer.
Yes. I choose not to.
I always tell people while I'm waiting in line, I'm like, oh, I will jam if you need me to. As they're like waving the panty around, I'm like, if you really need me to, I will. And then I'm like, oh, good, there's a blocker spot open. And then I'll go out and I'll block. And I'm like...
Yeah, that's me, but the other way around. When people want me to jam, I'm like, yeah, let's go. And then they want me to block, I'm like,
yeah,
block what?
You have to take your knives. You're gonna knife people. That girls. It's funny, Slay, when you were talking about the A player, for some reason my brain went to prepping for a game, like day of game time. And I thought of all of my teammates in Miami's neurospiciness, like just how everyone preps differently. Like I have a person in Miami that I love so very much. And before a game, I'm very hyped. Like I try to like listen to music. I want to work out. I want to like talk shit. I really just want to get warm and kind of just warm in all areas, warm verbally, warm physically. I want to go look at the track, whatever, all of the above. And this person that I love so very much, and I feel like we're so similar in a lot of ways, is the opposite. Before a game, she's got her headphones on. She's like in her own world. She has a specific game day playlist. She doesn't want to be spoken to. Like, she doesn't want any type of vibes around her. Like, you can't give like too good of vibes and you can't give like negative vibes. So, and it's just interesting because I can actually go through an entire roster of like right before the pandemic who I was rostered with and kind of tell you how everybody preps for it. And that's another beautiful thing I think about being a teammate and even as a derby wife too, because I know for Slay, like when I'm there on game day for her, I'm like, this is exactly what my wife needs. Like, and Slay also is very particular about her like wake up and get ready routine for a game day and like what she needs to eat. So I think that our brains definitely play a huge part in that and getting into almost like battle mode, right? Because we're about to go play a full contact sport. So we have to get into a certain mindset. And it is different for everyone. Everyone is kind of prepping differently.
Yeah. With my OCD, there's just like very particular things that I need to do, very particular things I need my body to feel. And if it's not, like, it feels like I lose my homeostasis if I'm not there. It's gotten better. I have, like this past game, there's a specific restaurant that I like to go to and get a specific thing for breakfast, but everything was moved earlier. So I was like, oh my God, I have to wake up earlier. This is awful. And then when I was going on my app to pre-order it to go pick it up, they didn't have any pickup slots before, you know, with time enough for me to go to the game and make it, because I was also like helping with setup and all that. And of course I was late. So I had to find a different restaurant. I'd been there before and I was like, okay, I know I like them. I will pick this. Okay, so I did deviate slightly from my routine and I didn't die. But it was still like one of those like just like getting my heart like, okay, if I don't eat this, if I don't eat it with the right amount of, you know, like calories or protein or whatever, but not too sweet, because then my head and then this and that, like I just get so like, it's, you know, the cognitive distortion of catastrophizing, it just turns into like one little thing turns into a big ripple of disaster. And it's like, then I'm going to feel lightheaded. Then I'm going to have a headache. And then when I jam, I'm going to suck. And then this is going to happen. It's going to be all my fault. And then I have to be like, okay, yeah. Oh, let me take my medication. Talk myself off this ledge. Okay. And usually once the food is in my belly, I'm okay. The night before, my anxiety is terrible because like, I have to have my clothes out, and sometimes I'll do my makeup before because I get like temporary tattoos. So it's like, okay, I'll just put this on and then go to bed, and then I don't have to worry about it when I wake up. But yeah, since it was like an hour or two earlier than the usual time that we have games, I was just here like struggling because I was used to being able to have a certain amount of sleep and then all that. So deviating out of the routine, it's just like, it's so frustrating because it's so small and so insignificant, but then it becomes this big ball of anxiety inside until I'm able to like complete the rituals. And it sucks because I'm like, come on, man, I'm on medication for this. But I mean, it also makes me feel like the routine is structured, and structure makes me feel comfortable.
That's me with my knee recently.
So like,
I'm off.
We're such opposites. It's so funny because like, when you're, you know, on your stuff, you're and I'm just like having to do very specific things. And hey, it worked. Okay, we won the game. I got MBJ, so it worked.
But I do find that, you know, especially with partnerships and, you know, people you're close with on the track, it does tend to be that way. Like that opposite. Me and my co-coach were very different when it comes to coaching and leading the team. And I will, and Slice can chime in on this, like, I'll do certain things before a game or during a game when I feel like the mental exhaustion is weighing on the team.
What do you do?
Like, I will just be like, yo, I call a timeout, and we all get in a big circle, and we do some breathing exercises. Right in the middle. I don't care. It's like right in the middle of the game. I'm just like, yo, all right. You bitches listening? Because we got to take a deep breath in. We got to hold it and then let it go. And honest to God, like,
I was going
to
ask, how much of the population would you say does that help? And how much would you say, you know, it doesn't really matter? And how much would you say it hinders? Because I was thinking about it immediately and I was like, man, would I like to stop mid-game and focus on my breath? Probably not. I'd probably be grumpy about it, but I'd probably need it. No, but I would probably need it. I'd be like, oh God, yeah, I haven't been breathing. I've been like shallow breathing for 2 hours.
Slice, what do you think?
I find it helpful. I find it really helpful, honestly, because it's usually when it happens, it's when like everything needs to slow down. Everything's going too fast. Everybody's kind of, I wouldn't say getting sloppy, but it's just like you can tell, like,
fatigued, yeah.
There needs to be a mental pause for people. And so like having that moment of zen is helpful. I love having that. My ritual for game day is very, very simple, of just like avoid cheese so I don't feel bloated and uncomfortable.
Oh, I feel it.
That is literally it.
That's kind of Slay too with the diet too. She's like, this will make me feel this way. This will make me feel this way. Like I need a power, but I need the carbs too. Like, and it's funny. I always joke with her.
I just don't want to feel bloated. Yes. I just don't want to like fart in the middle of this game. That's like literally all I'm worried about.
Yes.
It's like, no. But I'm very much like you, where it's like I'm a people person. Like the more people who are around me and like the social aspect of it, it makes me feel better about going into it.
Yes. Those solitary people before a game, like we have a couple too, but one specifically that I'm close with, that the one that I was talking about, I'm always like, man, like I just couldn't like confining myself before a game just would not be my jam. Mm. Unintended. I was going to say something too about like what I was saying about the dietary like restrictions with Slay. My ex-wife before her, my ex-derby wife who actually plays for Chicago now, was very similar too, but it's those fast metabolisms. Like you guys get, and you're both jammers, like you guys get hangry, but you need that like good nourishment to get you through the game, or it becomes a mental game. So like something that is 90% physical, right? Like you're out there hitting or whatever, But like just those little inconsistencies throw you off and you're like, man, that mental game is not there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she's neurospicy too. And whatever deep seated doubt starts coming out and, you know, the ADD just starts flying.
See, and you mentioned that you feel like Derby is only like that the mental game is like,
only no, it's more. After I said that, I was like, no, it's like
the mental game is,
I would say, it's like 50-50, if not like 60-40.
And there's a lot of times as a trainer or as a coach where I'm teaching somebody a new skill. And like, it's something I often say where it's like, your body knows how to do this. You just need to get past it in your brain. And once you can do that, you're gonna do it. And you're going to wonder why it took you this long. But if you can get over that mental hurdle of doing that transition or, you know, taking that hit, you know, I think that, you know, kind of like what we talked about in our last episode with you, Slay, you know, people need to get comfortable with this sport because it's different. It's not like a basketball or
you've seen growing up.
It's like you have space. We are very much. I touched somebody's like side
always,
boob yesterday.
Always. I always say, I'm sorry about your side knee.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've all had a skate wheel to the booty.
I thought you were saying to the vagina because I was like, hell yeah, I had.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say a China.
Yeah,
China.
I love that term for it. I have a much more derogatory term for it, so I actually like that way better because mine could be triggering. So that's great. A vagina China.
Well, and honestly, for me, when I am coaching, especially when I'm coaching freshies, and I don't know why I do this, but I do this when I am coaching a large group of people, almost always, if there is a sexual innuendo or pun, I am taking it. And I am always running with it. Like a 1,000 miles a minute.
Okay, like I'm literally the one on the track who's twerking until the whistle Aren't blows. All,
you know,
I don't even have a booty, but I don't care. I'm still going to throw it back like I do.
But what I will say is that I've started to really try to tone it down, especially with newbies, because that could really put be off-putting. But for me and the people around me, they just know, oh, carnage.
Yeah. Oh, carnage.
Carnage. But it's like, not everybody, nobody knows me. Nobody knows that I'm totally fucking kidding.
And they might feel uncomfortable.
Ridiculous jokes. And I don't want
so that was me transitioning teams. I, in Miami, I touch everybody's butt. Like, you know, those have been my people for 8 years. And like, obviously not freshies. I'm not walking in touching freshies' butts, but similar to you, Carnage, I'm like, man, everybody knows Pachanga. Like this is, you know, who I am. And on Swan City, I really had to be like, your body, your choice. Like, you know, you're consenting. Like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to touch your butt in that baseline. Like, cause usually most of the time in those scenarios, it's accidental. But I definitely had to be so mindful of people's sensory issues, their body limitations, triggering somebody, PTSD, like all of those things where I'm like, I just love everybody. I want to touch butts like in a non-sexual way, in like a camaraderie way. Like it's not working. I'm coming off predatorial.
Meanwhile, I'm here like, I don't know you, don't touch me.
Yes, yes. Play is like, stop.
Yeah, that's, but I mean, now in Derby, like, at least in Orlando, like, I've been there long enough where there are people that I want to jump in and give a big hug to, or I'll smack them in the butt or something, but I'm like, I gotta warm up to that, and I can't be like that with everybody, so it does take time, but then, like, those are the people I love the most, like, Bachi, I grab your butt all the time. Like,
this is true. All right, what is my body, my choice?
I was just gonna say, like, I think, just asking for consent has been like, because I'm a hugger, I hug everybody, but like I've definitely gotten into the habit of, can I hug you, do you want to hug, you know, like,
yes,
I don't automatically, because we have had people come onto our team like, please don't hit my butt, I don't like, I don't like that, like don't do certain touching, and like, yes, we are in a full contact sport where we're constantly touching each other's butts. But, like, outside of the game, like, keep it consensual. Like, can I give you a hug type deal? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, consent goes a very long way.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, because I'm not always a hugger. There are definitely, I need my space. In fact, I will start to get very, very agitated if I'm being hugged and I'm not happy about it. So I think that it's been great to have this kind of awakening that Derby has had, especially over like the last 10 or 12 years or even 15 years, where, you know, it was really raw and rough and tumble in the beginning, like of the resurgence of Derby. And now it has grown. It has become more empathetic to people's concerns and people's wants and needs. And I mean, it can get exhausting. It can get exhausting, especially if you're in a leadership role, but that is your job as a leader. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to have that empathy. Otherwise, you're not going to be a very good leader.
And I think one of the beautiful things about neurodiversity, neurospiciness, what you want to call it, like, is that it's a superpower in its own right. And it's, you know, something that when people, like, Derby attracts a lot of neurodiverse people, and that's not by accident, or maybe not intentional, but like, it's not for no reason. It's not a coincidence, because I mean, look at the game itself. That could appeal to someone with ADHD, because you only have to pay attention for 2 minutes. 2 minutes is not that bad. 2 minutes max. Or having to switch modes all the time. Like, that's something that is also, you know, very helpful. Having explosive energy, that's helpful. So there are a lot of ways that, you know, it's beneficial to have people who are on different neurodiversity type of categories, that they do thrive in a lot of ways. And it's exciting and beautiful to see it too. So, I mean, I don't want us to just focus on like the difficulties, but also just like the way that it makes people
absolutely
blossom amazingly in a sport that almost feels like it's meant for people like them. Because yes. I mean, how many sports have, you know, 2 minute jams or have like those short, you know, like these things, and all the body positivity, all the, you know, because everybody comes in different shapes and sizes. Everybody has different disabilities, whether it be, you know, like physical conditions. We have people with lupus. We have people who have, you know, are coming back from injuries. So like, there's so many different things that, we have someone with Hashimoto syndrome. So there's like a lot of things that we have to take into consideration, because every human, every mind is a universe. Every person, every human is a whole reality. Yeah. And what I think is great is that roller derby has been able to be one of those sports where it's almost like the universal puzzle piece or the universal plug. Like, everybody can plug into, and there's, you know, a slot for every type of plug. You know, there's a type. Yeah. There's the master key. There you go. The skeleton key, because you gotta be spooky. Skeleton key.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, it's welcoming for all, you know, gender expressions. It's open to LGBTQ. Yeah. It's open to all body types. It's open to, you know, just all different types of mental health conditions as well. I feel like it's really nice to see that there is a place where so many people with ADHD, with OCD, with PTSD, with, you know, different things that fall under neurodivergence, they're able to find a home, because there's so many sports that just by its structure in its own, it makes it difficult for them to really be able to fully function in that sport. Yeah. So they recommend a lot of individual sports for kids with ADHD. And while that's wonderful, that can be really isolating too. So being able to still say, hey, there is a team sport for you. It is the roller derby, not a cult.
Are you sure? Are you sure?
Not a cult. Hashtag
we swear.
Yeah.
I was going to also mention, speaking of like superpowers, we actually have a ref here in Miami who is autistic. And whenever I talk to her about it, she says how much it helps her as a ref, that it makes her, you know, more attentive actually to what's going on, because there's something about the sound of the game or the way the game is played and all of that. She's like, you know, it almost scratches that itch that I hear a lot of autistic people talk about, where it's just a level of uncomfort. But it's beautiful that a game that can be so chaotic is the opposite. It almost brings her comfort, and specifically being in an officiating role makes that itch feel even better, because she feels like she's helping kind of the process of the game and kind of like propel the game further. So speaking of superpowers.
It's being able to satisfy a fixation. Yeah. And it's like, ooh, no one's going to give me crap about a fixation because I'm actually fulfilling a role.
Yes.
Here.
I was looking at some other things that kind of fall under neurodivergence or neurospiciness. And one of the main things that popped out that I don't even know why I haven't mentioned yet is obviously anxiety and depression. Roller derby has helped me immensely with my anxiety and depression. The days that you don't want to show up to practice are the best days to show up to practice. And I say that with kind of the resolve of, honestly, for me, that's been a 50-50, but I know for a lot of people, like once I get there, I feel a lot better. But days that I like, I'm full of self-doubt and I am just like mad at myself, getting out there and just being successful at, like, I don't know, my 27-5 or a transition or, you know, really, really minor goals or really, really major goals. It just is so fulfilling. And I think it just like kind of helps a part of it, you know. Obviously nothing is resolved totally, but it definitely kind of gives me that confidence. And I also suffer with PMDD a little bit. So especially getting there during my cycle, like right before my cycle, I don't want to go. I'm vehemently looking for reasons why not to go. And then when I show up, I'm like, I'm such a badass. Like Athena herself couldn't take me on. Like I just feel so much better about everything that I am. And I see that with a lot of women too. People like, oh, I'm on my cycle today and I feel like shit. And I hate myself. And I'm like, but you're a practice. And by the end of practice, they're just singing such a different tune. And I'm just so happy that I came. I feel really good. Just the physical energy. Putting on your gear, pissed off as hell. What the fuck? Why am I even here? It's not even going to go well. And then you get out there and you're like, I'm a bird. I am so good at this sport. I'm flying and gliding and I'm helpful to my teammates. Like, look at me. I think it really just, like we were saying about scratching itches, like in our brain. I think it scratches so many itches and just gets that physicality out that we really need.
I just love being around the people. I just love going and, like, you know, not being like, not seeing, I love my partner, but I see him every day. I see my stepkid every day. And it's just like, oh, yay, some novelty. I get to see the people that make me smile. Because I mean, even on days where like I'm on my way and my body's anxious, it's like, oh, you're going to get hit today. Because my body does that sometimes. In my mind, I'm like, I'm excited for practice. And then my body's like,
yeah.
And I'm like, stop that. You stop that. Like, calm down. I'm fine. I'm going to get hit, but it's going to be fine. And then, you know, like get my skates on and it's like, okay, we know how to do this. And it's so nice to be able to just turn off the rest of the world.
I have issues with anger. I have a lot of trauma where that is concerned as far as long standing. So there are a lot of my stress can come out in, like, in anger towards myself or just the anger towards that just radiates out for me. Like, people know when I walk in the door, like, oh, Carnage is in a mood today. Okay.
Is that coach thing?
I'm going to give her a wide berth.
I have a good
And honestly, like, if if I can get my skates on without crying, because that's typically my response to when I'm that angry, if I can get on the track and just bust out like the fastest 5 laps that I can do, I feel like at least halfway better. And then it's like, okay, let's get started.
Those are the
man. I'm playing some of my best scrimmages angry, like after an argument with my partner, and then I'm like, rah! And I just show up in a huff, and they're like, yo, you're good today. What's different? And I'm like, I'm pissed off at Chris, and they're like, oh, okay.
I had one of my best performances as a very angry person at about.
I think that it gives us that opportunity to practice those coping skills that I think otherwise maybe we wouldn't have had to learn. Maybe if we chose to stay in our comfort of our bubble, like we've all been saying, it's a full contact sport. It's not like we're going out there and, like, I don't know, picking daisies every evening. Like, we're really going out there and compensating for other people's feelings, our own feelings, hitting other people, getting into other people's spaces. So I think we really have to do what makes us feel most comfortable and advocate for what makes us feel most comfortable. And you're learning too. We don't even just play. Most days we're learning. So I think that you really have to, on so many levels, dissect who you are as a person and what's going to be most beneficial to you.
And that's actually really interesting for me is when I tell, so we have a pretty set, like, thing that we do at practice. And then every so often I'll introduce a new skill. Oh my god. It's like, what is this? Why? And like the anxiety just like wafts all over the track. And I'm just like,
hello.
Everyone turns into like that that caveman SpongeBob of just like,
yeah.
Yeah, like what? Why? And I literally spend 15 minutes while everybody's doing it to be like, yes, I know. This is why this is called practice. We're trying a new thing. I promise you it'll be worth it. Yes, I get that this is hard. I understand your feet don't move that way. Okay.
Me with hockey stuff.
It's like this wave. And then, so last night we did this skill again for the second time. And people are like, oh, you know, I think I'm starting to get this. I'm like,
ain't that crazy?
Uh-huh. Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. I know. It's called.
Spice is like, no.
You
are not the only one.
It's almost like practice makes progress.
And I was like, yeah, I know. But yeah, I find as a coach, though, if you deviate from the norm or try to incorporate certain things, it is trying to find that sweet spot to tell a group of 20 to 30 people, okay, let's try this new thing. And like 5 people learn this way and 3 people learn that way and 10 people learn this way. And it's like, it is one of those things where you have to try to cater. And that's why I feel like you should always have at least 2 coaches at practice. So that maybe like, okay, this group needs this from this person. And we have coaches, like trainers that are on the team too. So I'm like, hey, work with this person on this. So it is trying to figure out that way to accomplish the goal whilst making sure nobody's getting left behind.
I think premising it with an expectation or lack thereof definitely helps take some of the performance stress, because I mean, I know there are times where we'll be doing something and then when they say, hey guys, if you feel like you suck at this, that's okay. This skill is hard. All right. And it's like okay, I don't feel so bad now. Okay. And when I practice with the Misfits, the coaches will say, hey guys, this is going to be hard. It might suck a little. Cause remember, you're playing against very highly skilled, experienced skaters. It's not you. It's just hard. Okay. Do not question your skill and go. And then
I was thinking about that. I've recently picked up our, you know, Derby's arch nemesis, pickleball. It's so fun, guys. I still preach the word of derby, but yo, pickleball's been fun. But in a stark contrast to derby, I am not like on a league. I'm not, you know what I mean? It's just me going out there and hoping for the best for like a battle. But because I'm learning almost under like trial by fire, every learning experience is a game. I'm not out there practicing with somebody. I'm like, hey, you want to do a pickup game? And I'm just like fighting for my friggin' life out there. I definitely, those learning strides that you see when you're going to something that has a practice where you are actively practicing the game that you will eventually play or put into at least strategies or, you know, game strategies. It's just such a stark difference because I really am in fight or flight mode when I play pickleball, which again scratches a part of that ADHD part of my brain where I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm a ninja with a paddle. But for derby, it definitely feels different being able to have that consistency, those expectations, you know, even if practice does get changed a little bit, I kind of know, you know, what the level of difficulty is going to be. And I know that I get to practice the skills before somebody's throwing balls at me. So, you know.
So we are getting on in time here. So to try to kind of wrap this up, can each of you tell us like what are two pieces of advice that you would give fellow neuro spicy people who want to try or either in the sport or are thinking they might want to try it?
I would just say be patient with yourself. And advocate, because I've been at this 7, maybe 8 years. I can't math anymore. And I still would not say that I am an A-level skater. And I would say that there's probably tons of people that have been playing. I mean, Slay's been playing 3 years and she is a killer jammer. You know, you just really have to take it at your own pace and your own time. And with that, you have to realize that the only way that you're going to get out of it what you want is by advocating for what you want, and realizing that everyone around you doesn't necessarily know what's happening in your brain. And it's great to communicate, but also to empathize simultaneously. So the same way that you want someone to empathize with you, you should also be empathizing with them. And that includes your coach, that includes your teammates, just anybody going out for derby.
And I would say for fellow neurospicy people out there, especially those of you who have OCD like I do, I would invite you to try derby because it's actually a great way to learn to be okay with falling down. You learn to be okay with making mistakes. And that's actually helped me a great deal because I was always very much a perfectionist. And okay, read the instructions, watch the instructions, do it. You should do it right. You know, if you're doing it wrong, then, you know, you failed. And it's not like that at all. It's you really learn to build patience with yourself and with your body and to accept where you are. Because I feel like a lot of times we're focused on the next step and where we're trying to go or that giant mountain when really we just have small foothills to get there, which aren't as overwhelming or scary as we build them up to be when we feel like things are out of our control. And another thing is that there's a high likelihood, I can't say zero, you know, like 100%, but there is a high likelihood that the judgments that you're making in your mind of they're going to make fun of me, they're going to laugh at me, they think I'm weak, they don't like me because of this, all these critical things that we might be putting on ourselves because of experiences that we've had in the past or because of just, you know, by virtue of the symptoms that you're experiencing, question those thoughts. Tell them no, because we can't read minds. And it's more than likely the opposite. Instead of people laughing at you, they're concerned. If they're looking at you, they're not judging you. They're watching you so they can help you. So, you know, take it as, I'd say until you're proven 100% otherwise, take all of this as an experience of encouragement and growth and not as something that people are going to judge you based on. Because I know that, you know, the rejection sensitivity is real with OCD, very, very perfectionist. And with ADHD, there's a lot of sensitivity about the difficulties that you struggle with and those insecurities of all my life I was told I was a bad kid, that I can't sit still, that I talk too much in class or any of these things. There's nothing wrong with any of us. We're just, you know, unfortunately, they gave us a one-size-fits-all education in our upbringing, and now things are getting better. And babe just walked in. But yeah, so that's definitely something, you know, I want people to know that it's people are not criticizing you as much as you think they are. It's really up here. Your feelings are not facts.
Yes. I wanted to touch on the idea really quick, sorry, of the universal design for learning. I thought about it when we were talking about teaching, but I think it's something that can be really beneficial in derby. It is the idea that everyone is a learner and everyone deserves to be taught. It is how we're supposed to be teaching in schools. It is not an idea that has really made its way in yet, but I think it can be applied to derby. I think that as long as we look at everybody as a learner and not, you know, that they have something going on with them or wrong with them or that they're not able to learn, I think that it would be a better space for derby.
And I would say as a person who has, I don't know, I have a lot of strong rejection issues and I get very defensive if I feel like it's part of the OCD thing. And it's just, so I feel that I am there. So I get I second guess myself a lot and I get, if I think somebody's being critical of me, I get super defensive because I get so ashamed. Like, I'm like, I'm just.
Oh, I feel that shame. Shame is so heavy. Ugh.
Yeah, I also blame it on my Catholic school upbringing. So
I went to Catholic school too! In Connecticut! Yeah,
there we go! It's those Connecticut Catholics. But I will say that for the entirety of my coaching career, so to speak, in roller derby, the number one thing that I talk about is communication. you have to talk about it. And whether it be via text, because you don't like the confrontation face-to-face, if it's in an email, if it's in a voicemail, whatever. Whatever your way of communicating is, I think it's really important if you want to do this, and if you want to do anything, really, you have to talk it through. Like, if you're having an issue, like, I can't read minds. I don't know what's going on. You need to find a way to communicate with me what you need. Because once you do, I will try my damnedest to make it better for you. And that's all I got. Just communicate. Communication, man. Reading Rainbow. Mm-hmm. Just find the way.
And I think another good take-home message is that regardless of who you are, your spiciness or lack thereof, how a person reacts to who you are is not a reflection on you. It's a reflection on them. If, you know, someone is stimming and a person is looking at you, like if you're stimming in some way and someone looks at you like, what are you doing? That's a reflection on them, not you. They're the ones who can't fix their face. They're the ones who can't say something tactfully.
They're
the ones who haven't educated themselves on, hey, you shouldn't comment on people's habits. Or you shouldn't comment on people's looks or comment on people's whatever it is, because we don't know what their story is. So, you know, same way that if anybody ever treats you guys like burdens or us. Okay, no, I have the OCD. So, yes, I'm a burden too. But either way, if anybody treats your needs like a burden, that's a reflection on them, because you're here trying to communicate, hey, these are what my needs are. And they're saying, I'm going to wipe my behind with your needs. And then I'm like, oh, okay, then you are unworthy of fulfilling my needs anyway. So
I love fix your face. I agree completely.
It's a reflection of them, not you. If you know, like, I want everybody out there, anybody who's neurospicy to really know that that's, it ain't you, it's them. You shine, you're fine the way you are. You know what I find funny? I feel like Rachi and I complete each other the way you and Slice complete each other, like OCD and ADHD. I feel like we're the darker side, and then they're the brighter, yes, cute red side.
I love it.
Oh, that's so funny. True.
Oh, can I plug my Instagram?
Yeah, please.
Yeah. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at hale_slay.10, so Hale Slayton. I share my mental health reels and all that, so fun times,
and they're really helpful. Everybody should check them out. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Sorry, I was gonna plug my Instagram too, but I'm a troglodyte, I don't really use it. So I mean, if you want, at creepy_carrier, it's my last name and I'm creepy, so yeah, I don't really share a lot on there. You're definitely going to catch a lot of my mental health issues on my story. So
awesome. Thank you both again so much for joining us. This was really just a pleasure to speak with you about this and to get your perspective on dealing with some diversity and neurodiversity.
Thank you guys for having us. It's been so amazing. Yay. You guys have been truly wonderful.
Yeah, it's been super fun.
Aww. Thank you.
So for now, I am Carnage.
I am Slice.
Go out there and be a goddamn delight today. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Mom, did you listen to my podcast?
What's a podcast?